The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
On the other side of this great nation, Florida is still a mess. You'll recall on election night that the winners in the Sunshine State were Republicans Ron DeSantis and Rick Scott. But the vote tally was so close that Florida has begun automatic recounts in both the Senate and the governor's races. Right now, we don't recount. Huge recount fans. Right now, we don't know who won. Of course, this is Florida. So once they factor the write-in votes, we might be looking at Senator Gator-wearing sunglasses. Strong on defense. Now, the recounters say they'll have results by Thursday. Thursday. This is so nerve-wracking. It's like waiting for the results from the doctor. Yes, Mr. Johnson, we have your lab work back, and I'm sorry, but you have DeSantis.
Oh, my God.
You'll need to call your previous partners and let them know. Now, Republicans have been skeptical of this recount from the beginning. One GOP congressman said, "For all I know, they're still counting ballots for Al Gore back there." Hey, that's not funny. They are. And hang in there, Al. Hang in there. And this morning, Trump tweeted, "The Florida election should be called in favor of Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis in that large numbers of new ballots showed up out of nowhere and many ballots are missing or forged. An honest vote count is no longer possible. Ballots massively infected must go with election night." Go with election night? You can't, that's not how it, you can't just pick the time that was best for you. I'm telling you, my team was up in the seventh inning. Then I went to bed. When I woke up, they had lost. An honest score is no longer possible. Must go with seventh inning. And these aren't votes just out of nowhere. They're absentee ballots. In fact, Florida accepts overseas and military ballots through November 16th, ooh, meaning that Trump's plan would disenfranchise military service members and Americans abroad. You're not supposed to celebrate Veterans Day by taking away their right to vote. You celebrate by posting a picture of your hot grandpa in World War II on Instagram and raking in the likes. Where else? Well, Arizona. They're still counting in Arizona. In Arizona's Senate race, after trailing on election night, Democrat Kyrsten Sinema now leads Republican Martha McSally by 1.5 percentage points.
She won.
So, Arizona has a heated race, but it's a dry heat, so it's pretty comfortable. But, you're welcome. Mm. But, unlike Florida, both sides in this election are saying every ballot should be counted. It's been slow because 75% of the state's electorate votes by mail. The other 25% Arizonans whisper their vote into a dream catcher. There was a brief controversy about what to do about some of the votes because signatures didn't match exactly on the ballots and the votes. But a court resolved the issue this week. Trump still freaked out, tweeting, "Just out in Arizona, signatures don't match. Electoral corruption. Call for a new election." Sure, how about 2016?
Yeah. All right. And with that, here we go. It's another week getting off to a start. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thank you for joining me here at NicoleSandler.com, or perhaps you're listening later on in the day at the Progressive Voices Network, or on the podcast, or on Netroots Radio, or GDPR, or however you listen. I'm just glad you're here, and thank you for doing so. All right, so I guess first things first, I'm here in Florida. The count is still going on. Arizona, they called the race for Kyrsten Sinema. It must have been after Stephen Colbert taped his show last night, because he tapes around 5 o'clock. So that's official. Sally McSally, she issued a polite and respectful concession on YouTube with her dog next to her. I mean, she might have passed for a human. Just go figure, a Republican. I know what it is. She actually wants John McCain's seat, which she could still be appointed to, since the Republican won the governor's race there as well. John Kyle is now serving out the rest of John McCain's time. We don't know for how long. Chances are that they'll appoint someone else to fill the seat for the remainder of the term, which I think goes till 2020. And I think McSally is hoping for that. So she's trying to be on her best behavior. As for what's going on in Georgia and Florida, well, we'll get all the answers, because on today's show, I know it's Tuesday and Gotta Laugh is usually here. Unfortunately, she's not here today because she's dealing with fire stuff. The good news is her house is still standing. She was evacuated, but they were allowed back in. So I think they went back home yesterday. Problem is, there's a new fire. She just sent me a message. She said, the new fire is right near us. The good news is that it's moving south for the moment. Evacuations are south of us, but very close. You know, I may live in Florida now, and I was raised here, but I still consider L.A. my home. Honestly, that's where my friends are. That's where I, had the bulk of my career, certainly my greatest career success. And it's still home to me, even though I haven't been there in a while. And I'm heartbroken for what's going on there. So, and I'm not a praying person, but my thoughts and everything are with our friends out in California, and I hope those damn fires stop. Okay, so today Laffy's not here. We're going to bring you the latest on the elections, mostly in Georgia and Florida, because that's where the recounts are happening. A little later on this hour, we're going to check in with Greg Pallast. You know Greg Pallast, who's been doing amazing work. I know he just returned home to California from Georgia. He might have also been here in Florida, or he just sent some people here to Florida. Either way, we'll talk to Greg Pallast in a little while. And right now, I'm calling my old friend and former colleague, Jim Defeedy. Jim is sort of the dean of South Florida journalists. He worked for years at Miami New Times and then the Miami Herald. These days, he and I worked together doing radio at WINZ before Clear Channel flipped it. So we have a fourth sports talk station in town, because in South Florida, because you know that's what South Florida really needed, rather than a progressive talk station. Anyway, let's call Jim Defeedy. He is the investigative reporter for the CBS owned and operated television station here in South Florida, CBS4. And Jim also hosts the Facing South Florida Sunday morning public affairs show. So this is his beat, is politics here in South Florida. All right, I'm trying to call him now. So Jim Defeedy will bring us up to date. Now, Jim also covered the 2000 elections. Uh-oh, something's going on here. Oh, I hope it's not my computer. I'm getting weird look here. Hello? All right, I'm going to try. Oh, there.
This is Jim Defeedy. Sorry, I missed your call. You can also try sending me an
All right. Well, we'll try him back in a minute. I'll give you I know he's expecting our call. I have no idea what part of South Florida he's in now. I think I dialed the wrong number. All right. So Jim Defeedy, investigative reporter for CBS4, where he covers all things politics. And we're going to get the latest from him, I hope, on, you know what? I think I'm going to have to text him, because for some reason it's like dialing, but it's not dialing. There it goes. Now it's ringing. All right, so this is live radio.
This is Jim.
Hey, Jim Defeedy. It's Nicole Sandler calling.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm good. How have you been?
Oh, just, you know, plugging away, still standing. So I guess that's one in my favor. You know, doing the online radio thing. I was just telling the listeners that you are at CBS4. You're an investigative reporter there. You host the Sunday morning Facing South Florida, the political Sunday morning public affairs show. So how's that recount going, Jim?
Well, you know, it's Florida, so we love our elections so much we don't want them ever end.
Never. Yeah. So I haven't been down to Lauderhill. I haven't been down to Brenda Snipes' office, except to drop off my ballot, because that's how we vote in my household. We get the absentee ballot, we fill them in, but we don't mail them in. We drop them off at the office there. But I know a lot of people were out there protesting yesterday. It looked like a strange group of people. Have you been out there?
I've been by. It is a strange mix. It's some Gillum Democrat supporters, but mostly it's just the Make America Great Again traveling troupe that just sort of hangs out and gets loud. And, you know, they found a new woman that they can chant "Lock her up" for.
That's
and
right.
They're happy.
Yeah. I was watching Ari Melber last night, who does a 6 o'clock show on MSNBC, and they were all lined up right behind them where the camera shot was, chanting "Lock her up," and other things that I couldn't quite make out. But it was hard to listen to an interview with all the screaming going on. But I guess that's, you know, the price you pay to broadcast a live TV show from down there.
Yeah, no, it's a scene, and there's been there's a lot of police presence down there. Sheriff's deputies mm-hmm. are there keeping order. Sometimes I get the feeling it's just there for the cameras in some ways.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, it's a version of, if you remember back in 2000, we had the Brooks Brothers mm-hmm. riot in the Miami-Dade elections headquarters, where a bunch of folks, well-dressed young men, all turned out to be Republican staffers out of Washington for various Congress people, came down and just banged on the windows of the Miami-Dade elections headquarters,
mm-hmm.
demanding that they stop counting the votes and the hanging Chad stuff. And it actually rattled enough people inside the elections office that because of their sort of activities, they did actually stop counting. They called it a halt to it, and the recount never continued in Dade County after that little Brooks Brothers riot, as it became known. So
right.
I think they were trying to recreate that in Lauderhill, but so far they haven't been successful on
yeah.
that.
Yeah, Broward had to get in on the action because Broward hasn't been, razzed enough about all this. So Miami-Dade, they had relatively few problems this year. Most of the problems seem to be in Broward County, and I understand what they're talking about with these undervotes for the Senate race. That's what's sort of in contention right now, is that there are somewhere around 30,000 undervotes, 30,000 or so more people voted in the gubernatorial race for either DeSantis or Andrew Gillum, then voted in the Senate race for Bill Nelson or Rick Scott. And, you know, my husband and I were talking about this, that who would vote? They'd vote in the Senate race, but not in the governor's race. Did I get it backwards?
I'm got it backwards.
Yeah.
But
so more people voted in the governor's race and voted in the Senate race. And I don't know. You tell us what's going on. I'm confused.
Sure. So in Dade County and the other 25 counties outside of Broward, the undervote, as you correctly described it, was, you know, fairly small. In Broward County, though, there was 26,000 more votes in the governor's race
okay.
than there was in the Senate race.
Right.
So the question became, how did that happen? Because you would figure that you could understand if, you know, you get down to, you know, the commissioner of agriculture or some of the judicial races, there's a drop off. But the first two contests are senator and then governor.
Right.
So you would figure that people would stick around for at least the first two. And because there are 25 or 26,000 actually undervotes where there's no vote registered in the Senate race, Bill Nelson is hoping that a hand recount of those votes will show that there was some sort of error with the counting machine, that mm-hmm. it was calibrated wrong to miss that part of the ballot, and that when they go through them by hand, they'll find actual votes cast for Bill Nelson or Rick Scott in that particular part of the ballot sheet. Now, the reason why it would be unique to Broward is every county supervisor designs their own ballot. And Broward designed a ballot
exactly the wrong way, exactly the way you are not supposed to. So if you think of a long sheet of paper, mm-hmm. on the far left-hand side are all the instructions telling you how to fill in the bubble and how to only select one and what to do in case you screw up. And so there's a long list of instructions. And then at the very bottom of that column, they put the Senate race. Well, back in 2007, the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, which was in part formed out of the 2000 recount debacle to advise election supervisors the best way to run elections, mm-hmm. they specifically say that when you have a long column of instructions, do not put the race underneath it, because tests have shown that voters will miss that race. They will just go to the top of the second column. So one of two things either happen. Either voters in Broward missed it because of it, where Brenda Snipes placed that race, the Senate race, on the ballot, or Bill Nelson is right and the machine was wrongly calibrated and wasn't picking up that corner of the ballot for certain machines that were counting.
Right.
So that's the debate. If there are markings there, Bill Nelson maybe has a chance. It's still not a great chance, but he's got a chance. If there are no markings there and it's just a design flaw and people were too stupid to look all the way down to the bottom of the ballot, then Rick Scott will be going to Washington as the next United States Senator.
Yeah, and sadly, I think that that's probably the case. I remember noticing that. I live in Broward County. On the ballot, off on the left, in the left lower left corner, there was the Senate race. The governor's race was at the top of the second column. So for some people, they probably just figured it started there. And these ballots were like, this ballot was like 6 pages long, both sides. So there was a ton of stuff to go through. And I would guess your average person didn't even think about, wait, there's a Senate race here I'm supposed to vote in.
Right, exactly. So if you think out of, you know, some 600,000 plus votes that were cast altogether, a little over 600,000, is it feasible that 25,000 people missed it because their eye just went, you know, to that second column where the governor's race was?
Mm-hmm.
It's possible.
Right.
You know, that's a probably more likely scenario. But again, the only way to know that for sure is to let the process play out and do a hand recount, which will determine it one way or the other.
Right.
And that's what's so frustrating when you've got Scott and Governor Scott and the president and even Senator Marco Rubio all screaming about fraud and deception and tainted ballots and all the rest of it, when this is the system. And actually, you know, to Florida's credit, I'll give Florida credit for this. In 2000, we had the hanging Chad. We had the dimpled Chads. We had the pregnant Chads.
Yep.
We had all sorts, every Chad you could imagine, you know, and then they got rid of that. And they moved to a system of touch screens for a few years,
mm-hmm.
just like your ATM machine, where you would touch the candidate you wanted and it would light up and that's how you cast your vote. But there was no trail. And nobody trusted the touch screens because you didn't want a situation where I touch one and suddenly register for another. How do you know for sure?
Right.
So we moved to paper ballots. This is exactly the way the system was designed to work. We have paper ballots so that when a race is this close, if need be, we can go to the paper ballots and actually look and physically see how people voted.
Right. And so that ostensibly is what's going to happen here. Now, the last I heard, there was a deadline of tomorrow, like Thursday deadline, to get the recount finished. Is that still the deadline?
So there are two types of recounts. So the first recount, which is as of Thursday at 3 p.m., they have to finish a machine recount.
Okay.
So if a race is under one half of 1%, those races have to go to a machine recount. And that meant that so in the governor's race, Andrew Gillum versus Ron DeSantis, in the Senate race, Scott versus Bill Nelson, mm-hmm. and the ag commissioner race, Matt Caldwell versus Nikki Fried, those all go to a machine recount. And a machine recount rarely changes the votes because literally all it is the entire state will put the 8.5 million votes back through the exact same machines again. So you usually don't get a big change in terms of the number of votes based on a machine recount. If after the machine recount, though, the race is less than a quarter of a point difference between the two contenders, then it goes to the hand recount. So Thursday at 3, we'll know which races go to a hand recount.
I see.
And that's likely to be the Senate race and the Ag Commissioner's race. And then that has a deadline that the hand recount is supposed to be done by Sunday. And I'm suspicious as to whether or not all the counties, all 67 counties, will be able to go through all of the under and over votes, which will probably be a couple hundred thousand mm-hmm. between Thursday and Sunday. I think that's going to be the problem for the deadline.
Right. And so that's probably going to go on here in Broward. It goes on in every county if there's a hand recount. Now, so Andrew Gillum, chances are he's not going to get down that far. He came in under the half a percentage point necessary to trigger the machine recount, but chances are it's not going to go any closer than that. Which is
yeah,
sad.
I think as of Thursday afternoon, Ron DeSantis will be the governor-elect, clearly. I think even the way you see Andrew Gillum in his public statements over the last week, he's not raising expectations that he thinks things are going to flip. He's just taking a principled stand that says, look, if people voted, they should have their votes counted, and this is an important process to play out, and this is what the rules call for, so let's play it out, and let's count every vote, and let the results fall where they may.
And of course, you know, and so he's being the adult about it, knowing that he's probably going to lose and still speaking in terms that everyone can understand. He's not calling anyone out for cheating or fraud. And we have you mentioned Marco Rubio, who was doing his best Trump imitation on Twitter the other day, calling out fraud and stuff. And Rick Scott, who sued. Did he sue Brenda Snipes' office, or did he sue the state to stop the counting, or who did he sue?
I'm afraid that I've run out of I don't have a current list of how many lawsuits there are.
God.
Bill Nelson has
uh-huh.
filed lawsuits.
Okay.
Rick Scott has filed lawsuits. The League of Women Voters has filed lawsuits. Everyone's filing lawsuits, trying to stake out different positions. At the end of the day, all these lawsuits sort of don't mean a lot. The only lawsuit that's going to matter will come in a few days. If the hand recount deadline cannot be met, somebody's going to have to go into court and file a lawsuit, probably Bill Nelson, and say, we need to extend the Sunday deadline. And then that'll be decided by the courts as to whether or not to extend the Sunday deadline. Because as it stands right now, a week from today, the state canvassing board, the state elections commission, is scheduled to meet and say, we're done with the elections and here are the results. And the head of the state elections commission is Governor Rick Scott.
Unlike in Georgia, where Brian Kemp finally stepped down, he had thought he had won the race for governor in Georgia before he did that, but he's no longer Secretary of State. Rick Scott, on the other hand, is still staying in his role as governor to oversee the election when he should recuse himself.
That's correct. I think that's one of the lawsuits that's been filed as well,
wow.
trying to force the governor to recuse himself from the election, the state elections commission. Now, I will tell you, even if he were to recuse himself, who would be replaced? You would end up just with the other members of the cabinet.
Mm.
So it would be Republican Pam Bondi, Republican Adam Putnam, and Republican Jimmy Patronis, the chief financial officer, all very closely aligned with Rick Scott, who would then form the canvassing board. So, you know, I actually think it would be smart for Scott to just recuse himself just because it would give a good look. And his friends are on there anyway, so he's probably not at any risk if he does recuse himself.
I'm just heartbroken that, and I know you're a journalist, so you're not going to take sides. But, oh, my God, Rick Scott in the Senate. I mean, I thought Bill Nelson was bad enough, but Rick Scott's going to just be worse. And then
I'll say this. I think Rick Scott has done himself real damage, you know, because I think his tone and his demeanor over this last week, you know, it crossed some lines that we haven't even seen really in Florida. We haven't seen that side of Rick Scott publicly say those sorts of things in that tone and demeanor. And you have to remember the Senate. So he's about to enter a new club, the United States Senate. So for a lot of those senators, the first thing that they're going to really realize and understand about Rick Scott is the way he conducted himself over the last 7 days. And that's going to form impressions. So everyone, I'm sure, in the United States Senate is aware of who Rick Scott has been over the last 8 years. They're not dumb in the United States Senate. But seeing him like this, I think he walks in a little tainted in a way that he didn't have to. I think he could have really played a little bit smarter, I thought, on this, and still made his way to the Senate and not end up having, you know, as such a partisan vibe on him that he's now put on himself.
Right. Well, Rick Scott, I mean, what most people know about Rick Scott, who don't follow Florida closely, is that he was guilty of perpetrating the largest Medicare fraud on the United States government, and Florida still voted him two terms as governor, and now eventually he'll be the senator, which is just mind-blowing. But it is Florida, and that's what happens here. Jim DeFede is with us again. You find him at CBS Channel 4 in Miami, covering politics and more, and, of course, Facing South Florida Sunday mornings. Jim, it's always so great to talk to you. And
Nicole, always a pleasure.
I hope you're having fun.
I miss you, Nicole.
I miss you, too.
I am.
Yeah.
I am, you know. Does everyone know our history? That we go way back in the day.
Yeah, well, here's what I like telling people is you hired me to be your producer at WINZ over Joy Reid. So I beat her out for one job.
I don't even remember that.
It was between me and Joy Reid, and you went with me. So at least I've got that going for me.
So there you go.
I
made the right choice, that was for sure.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Jim, I like Joy, too.
I do, too.
Get me wrong,
but she's doing great for herself now.
I think she picked herself up after I rejected her. Yes.
I think so, too. It took a while, but she's done all right for herself. As have you. Yeah. Jim, it's always great talking to you. And I always still tell people about your book. You were in the air on 9/11 when the planes hit, and your plane, like most others, was diverted to Newfoundland. And you wrote an amazing book.
Actually, I wasn't on the plane.
Oh, you weren't on the plane.
I came back later and reconstructed what took place.
Okay.
So I wasn't diverted to Canada. But it's called The Day the World Came to Town. And it's heartwarming. And so if all of this negativity and politics mm-hmm. has got you down, read The Day the World Came to Town. It'll fill you with hope that the human spirit still lives in some people.
Definitely. That there are still good people out there, but it figures they're from Canada. Just saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
All right, Jim. I'll let you get back to work. Thank you so much. It's always great to talk to you, and I know you're the guy to call on when stuff like this is going on. So thank you again.
Thank you, Nicole.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Bye bye. The one and only Jim DeFede. You can find him on Twitter at DeFede. And if you want to get a load of what's going on here in Florida, you can find. I don't know if they stream live on the web or not, but they're at cbs4.com. Jim, of course, is Mr. South Florida. All right, coming up in a few minutes, it's only Tuesday. My head is mush. We're going to talk with Greg Palast, the wonderful Greg Palast, who has been in Georgia dealing with their recount. So we'll check in with Greg Palast next. Don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler at nicolesandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
His awful policy of having terrified migrant toddlers ripped from the arms of their parents. I'll tell you today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. In June, our immigrant-bashing president ordered an end to his own warped policy of forcibly tearing terrified migrant children from the arms of their asylum-seeking parents. Trump declared, "I didn't like the sight or the feeling of families being separated." Yeah, bad optic, as PR consultants call scenes of such thuggishness. So he and we no longer have to witness nightly TV coverage of shrieking toddlers being taken from their parents and hauled off to federal warehouses. But wait, out of sight doesn't mean the depravity has ended. Some 500 of the 2,900 children who were snatched last spring are still in government custody, scared that they'll never see their parents again and traumatized by the uncertainty of what'll happen to them. Worse, more refugee children are being incarcerated every day as they seek asylum from the horrors of rapacious gang wars and abject poverty in their Central American homelands. More than 12,000 migrant children are now out of sight and out of mind in our government's warehouses, military bases, and sprawling tent cities. And Trump is requesting money to lock up another 20,000 children. All this trauma and cost is the result of the Trumpeteers' inhumane and failed zero-tolerance policy of jailing children, even babies, in hopes of scaring other refugees from seeking asylum in our land of opportunity. They created this humanitarian crisis, and rather than ending it by rushing in hundreds of lawyers and judges to process the asylum requests, Trump and his rabidly anti-immigrant ideologues are taxing us by building more jails for refugees while also openly violating the law that says immigrant children cannot be locked up for more than 20 days. This is Jim Hightower saying, for more about Trump's sick and sickening policy, contact Kids in Need of Defense at supportkind.org.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
No, I can't. All right, Nicole Sandler back with you. In just a moment, we're going to be speaking with Greg Palast. Greg is the author of several New York Times bestsellers, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy and Armed Madhouse. He's the investigative reporter for BBC Television, The Guardian, Democracy Now!, and Rolling Stone. He's also released the post-election update of his film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, The Case of the Stolen Election, on Amazon or at gregpalast.com. Greg has been working tirelessly, that would be, covering the messes still going on in Florida and Georgia. And I think we've got him on the line. Greg Palast, are you there?
Indeed, I am.
Yes, he is.
I am here.
Yay.
In Los Angeles.
Right. So did you just get back to Los Angeles? Because I know you were in Georgia,
yes.
Right?
Yes. I was in Georgia, and my crew just escaped from Florida.
And they didn't even call or anything.
Ugly stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, all right. So I just spoke to my friend Jim Defiti, who is, you know, I'm down here in South Florida, too, where it is a mess. Yeah. And so he brought us through a little bit of what's going on. Tell us what's happening in Georgia. What's the latest on the status there?
Okay. Here's what's happening in Georgia. From my last report, you know, that I had sued Brian Kemp, got the list of all the purge voters, Brian Kemp, the Republican candidate and Secretary of State at the same time. Two hats, two heads, one evil thought to get rid of black voters. So we got the purge list from him. I had experts go through every name with a computer.
Right.
We know for absolute certain 340,134 voters were wrongly purged from the voter rolls.
Wow.
Go to you'll see soon on my Facebook or website, Black Lives Matter. It's holding up balloons that say 340,134. Voters purge from our report in front of the state building. Good luck. Stacey Abrams went, so I went to the polls with voters, and we had Raheem Shabazz, who should never have been purged, but he saw his name at gregpalast.com, and he registered, but it was too late. So he went in, and he knew that he should at least demand and get his provisional ballot, which he did. And that's what the argument is about now. They have at least 28,000 provisional ballots. We think that there are more that are being kind of stuffed away, but 28,000 we know of. Now, a provisional ballot is what you give a ballot to someone who should be voting, but their name is suddenly missing.
Mm-hmm.
You sign that ballot under penalty of perjury. Now, it used to be called an affidavit ballot, and it would be counted absolutely unless someone comes up with a reason why you're lying. No, that's not an American citizen. No, they don't live in this district. If someone can say, no, that's not true, they'd not only throw away your vote, but they'd arrest you.
Right.
But you know, we're now said that you have 28,000 Americans who are lying?
That's ridiculous.
That they're not Americans, that they're voting in the wrong place, and I was with them. So one is Raheem Shabazz in Atlanta. When I was there, there was another one who's filling out, forced a provisional ballot, the 92-year-old cousin of Martin Luther King, voted in the same place for 50 years, since the year King was murdered, 68. This is going to be her 50th year of voting. And they said, no, you can't vote. And they shoved her a provisional ballot.
Now, I have
Kemp is not.
I have a video of her that you sent me that we can play now. So this woman also happened to be Martin Luther King's cousin?
Yes.
Unbelievable. All right. So
I only found that out when I went to her house. Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of cool. But here's the video that you shot in Atlanta, this 92-year-old block from voting in Georgia.
and a granddaughter.
And her granddaughter. Never. Here we go.
How long have you been voting?
All my life, ever since I was old enough. But I've been voting right here, ever since 1968.
Wow. And it's just, it's horrible. And I say that because the West End, she's been in this community back when we could, when they were doing sit-ins. She held civil rights meetings in her home. And today to come out and not be able to vote and no one can give you an explanation, like, it's extremely emotional and it bothers me. It bothers me to my core. Like, there's actually no record of her whatsoever voting in any election whatsoever. Oh, and it's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
So Greg Palast is with us. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It just absolutely heartbreaking for the granddaughter as well as the grandmother. I mean, this is not what America is supposed to
be. Exactly. And you know, I got this on film, which no Atlanta station would run. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution would not touch.
Oh my God!
We still have apartheid press in America, and this is one of the big problems we have.
Now,
Greg,
how did they decide how to use the provisional ballots? Because I know down here in Broward County, Florida, there was like a major push that on Thursday, if you voted with a provisional ballot, you need to show yourself at the Broward Supervisor of Elections office and bring ID with you to prove that you're that person and they'll count your vote. But everybody who voted with a provisional ballot was told they needed to get down to the Supervisor of Elections office, which I'm sure didn't happen.
Well, that's crazy stuff, too, because you go in and you show in Florida, you have an ID law requirement,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
You've already shown your ID.
Yeah.
So why do you have to show your ID again?
Don't know.
This is nonsense. They're saying that the supervisor in Broward is being pro-democratic. Baloney.
No, she's not.
They should say, we're counting all those provisional ballots
yep.
because those people showed ID, and there's no reason to believe that they are not legitimate voters. And, you know, one thing that we found in Georgia and is happening in Florida, they're removing hundreds of thousands of people who missed a couple elections. They didn't feel like voting in 14 and 16. And they're saying, okay, you're gone. Because they sent you a postcard, which you never saw. It's junk,
right.
junk mail.
Right.
The National Voter Registration Act says in black letters, you cannot lose your registration for not voting. What they're saying is that not voting is an indication. Are you ready for this? That you've moved from the state or you've moved your out of the county.
Unreal.
How's not voting have anything to do with that? So we had the top address experts, four consulting firms in the United States, go through the lists we got from this lawsuit, and they said 340,134 people who they said move because they didn't vote a couple times, that in fact they're still at their original registration address. And remember, they get no notice that they've been purged,
mm-hmm.
like Raheem Shabazz. And the other problem is that they are not even giving people provisional ballots. I mean, I've always told people, don't take a provisional ballot, demand a real ballot,
right.
and often being firm, not violent, firm
mm-hmm.
works. Santita Jackson, Jesse Jackson's daughter, took that advice and got a real ballot
oh, wow.
to try to throw a provisional. And I've seen many people do that through insistence. But what we had a fight for in Georgia, and you'll see today, we're going to be posting soon a GregPalast.com and at my Facebook page, a woman, Ashley Jones, a Latina, who tried to register twice. They never acknowledged her registration. She was at the Secretary of State's website. She shows up, and then she knew, because she was with me, that she could get a provisional ballot at least so that they could fight about it in court. And they said, you can't get a provisional ballot. Why? Because, well, you're not on the voter rolls. Well, wait a minute. The whole point of the provisional ballot is to say I've been illegally removed from the voter rolls. But they're saying, but if you're not on the voter rolls, you don't get a provisional ballot. Well,
oh,
if she's on the voter rolls, she wouldn't need one.
Right.
I mean, so this catch-22 is created by Brian Kemp, the candidate himself. I actually think it's crazy that a lot of Democratic county officials go along with this junk. Just say that's not the federal law. The federal law is that these votes get – that people get provisional ballots – and that unless there's a reason not to, you count them.
Right.
I just think that this is like crazy. that we are making people jump through hoops, like go down to an office with their ID, and you know, it's like you already had them bring their ID.
That's
you know,
right.
They're wrong. They are victims of illegal government action. They shouldn't have to go to the government and say, "Oh, I'm really this is me, the victim of your crime." That is crazy. Okay, and we're going along with it, and we should not go along with it. And Pelosi says a voting rights bill will be her first act.
Mm-hmm.
My number one thing will be junk those provisional ballots. Make
yeah.
them affidavit ballots where the state has to prove that someone is lying. That's what we need. And but I'm telling you, in Georgia, it was ugly. The 92-year-old woman, Ashley Jones, a woman, Yasmin Bakhtiari, her parents are Iranian immigrants, purged. She waited for 2 hours asking three people for provisional ballots. They would not give it to her. You know, it's just absolutely mad. I mean, I want everyone to watch that film of the 92-year-old Christine Jordan being denied a vote. I would also like people then to take, after that, you cry over that one, at least you get a little bit of dark humor by another one-minute film of Ashley Jones, the Latina, trying to vote, trying to even get a provisional ballot. And we do that as kind of a how to vote in Georgia in 21 easy steps. I mean, she literally went through 21 steps. And by the way, I'll give you the punchline. Step 21 is sue Brian Kemp in federal court. You know, so to vote in Georgia, if you're not white, we're really going back. This is worse than what I saw in 2018. The difference was 2018, since it came down to a couple hundred votes.
You mean 2016?
Excuse me, 2000
okay.
in Florida.
Gotcha.
2000 in Florida. Now, you know, for those who know me, you know that I uncovered how thousands of black people were removed from the voter rolls, being called felons
mm-hmm.
by Catherine Harris and mm-hmm. Jeb Bush. And their only crime was voting while black. And I'll have you know, the New York Times did cover that story 2 years after I wrote it.
Wow.
Two years later.
Uh-huh.
And once again, by the way, don't worry. The New York Times has called me and now asked me for all my investigative material. Well, that's nice of you
really?
To kind of get around to it. You know, I'm not going to say no, but this is the lazy-ass American reporters. And I want to remind you, the Miami Herald not only said about the purge of black voters in 2000 that they didn't ignore the story. Instead, the editor sent around an email viciously attacking me, saying this story is baloney.
Wow!
And then retracted that statement after the U.S. Civil Rights Commission said that Powell's reporting was deadly accurate.
Wow. And so at least you're finally getting some credit for the amazing work you've been doing. I got to say, if people go to gregpalace.com, you have right there on the menu voter purge lists. And it's a pull down.
And you could go to your state. I mean, Florida, we don't have the purge list up, but we have Nevada and Georgia and Arizona. This is very satisfying. Illinois, Indiana, where in many of these states, we got to these states before the voter registration closed. And a lot of the groups in Indiana, like Black Lives Matter, were at the polls with my website up.
Wow.
So they could see if someone was missing, why they were missing, which is important in getting us the names. So I think we're not done. I think I'm hoping that if Judge Totenberg, it's actually Nina Totenberg's sister, order a new election, that is because, first of all, Georgia can't say, oh, that's really too difficult because Georgia already assumed they had already set up for a rerun in December under Georgia law.
Right, because they're having, they have to have a runoff for the Secretary of State, right?
They have to have a runoff. So they're already running a runoff in December, and therefore it's no big deal to add. They assumed, in fact, originally, I think the papers are all saying, oh, this is going to a runoff. But Kemp suppressed enough votes, stole enough votes, blocked enough voters, that he's going to, unless they do something about these provisional and absentee ballots and let them get counted, they should be, Kemp is going to like squeak through like 6,000 votes by not counting 5,000 absentee ballots, not counting 28,000 provisional ballots. I mean, In fact, if you count all those ballots, there wouldn't be a rerun. Stacey Abrams would be governor, and that would be done.
Now, let me ask you this, Greg. Brian Kemp was Secretary of State. He declared himself the winner.
Thursday.
Right. On Thursday, he declared himself the winner and then quit and then stepped down as Secretary of State. So now that Stacey Abrams is holding their feet to the fire, thank goodness, and demanding that they count the provisional ballots and they count every vote, who's running the election?
Brian Kemp.
But I thought he stepped down as Secretary of State.
Yeah, but no, he's got his flunkies in there. He's got his whole office.
It's his people
He already purged the voters.
Gotcha. Yep.
They're not unpurging the voters. They already blocked voters from getting their provisional ballots. You know, he basically declared 2 days after he steals the election, he says, okay, well, I'm not going to run the election anymore.
Right.
Well, excuse me? The whole thing is tainted, is wrong, and they should rerun it. And, you know, or my preference is count all the votes and then Stacey Abrams is governor and we're done.
Right.
You know, it's simple. So
yeah, now they could.
Watch my space, watch Salon. You'll see more from Georgia and Florida.
Right. Now if Kemp is currently just slightly over 50%, if he dips below 50%, that triggers the runoff. And as we said, the Secretary of State office, they're already having a runoff for Secretary of State to replace Brian Kemp. That's the only thing that would trigger a runoff election is if Kemp falls below 50%.
Yeah, unless the courts say, look, this election is so poisoned. Because the other thing that has to be done is we need to return those 340,000 people to the voter rolls before the runoff.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't help to have a repeat of what we just had on last week.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have a rerun with allowing voters to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that the judge has to do. But, you know, I'm trying to get to Common Cause in the lawsuit did cite my work. And one of those terrible, terrible, you know, just bad coincidences is that they had till 3 o'clock. So they were citing my work, but they had till 3 o'clock to get an expert to the judge.
Oh, no.
And they didn't know I was still in Atlanta.
Oh.
I was trying to I didn't reach Common Cause until 4:15, an hour past the judge's deadline, because I'm a qualified. For those who don't know me, I've had many lives, and before as an investigative reporter, I was an investigator, and I was a qualified expert witness in major litigation, and I also taught statistics at Indiana University on top of everything
wow.
else. So I have a long history, and I lectured at Cambridge University in England. And so I'm a qualified expert for them, but I couldn't reach them in time. Now I'm trying to see if we can kind of fix this all up. There's a lot of political, there's a lot of legal work being done behind the scenes, and frankly, I can't talk about it all because of legal confidentiality. But this thing ain't over.
Right.
And importantly, here's what's important. The one good thing about this blowing open like this is that now people will wake up for 2020.
I hope so.
Because, and maybe even that the former Democratic Party, remember the Democratic Party?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, the old people like us remember the Democratic Party. There was John Kennedy, and then it kind of disappeared. the Democratic Party is coming back to life. We'll see. While Pelosi's not the best public image for that.
No.
She has said that she's now going to make, not Donald Trump's tax returns. I don't care about Donald Trump's tax returns, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But she's going to make voting rights the first question, because all other questions are answered by the voting rights answer, which is to make sure that people can vote. If you can't get that, you don't get nothing else. It doesn't matter what's on Donald's tax return.
That is very true. We need our elections to be free and fair. It was a few years ago after, you know, one of our myriad of election problems, I struck up a conversation with James Carter on Twitter. James Carter is Jimmy's grandson. And and what he told me was, you know, I asked, why don't we have like a UN observer come? Why don't they declare that the U.S.'s elections are, you know, FUBAR? And he said, basically, the Carter Center won't get involved because Because we have a different system from the state to state. He said, we don't follow any uniform rules. We're more, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but basically we're more fucked up than any of these third world countries that they go and observe because we have we have 50 different systems. Nothing.
I've been asked about the international observers. The Carter Center, like other international agencies, will not observe an election which they believe is already bent.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to have already meet a minimum standard for elections procedure and democracy before they will observe, for the simple reason that they don't want to observe and try to put a stamp on something which is already fixed before they walk in. So the Carter Center, by its rules, and the UN by its rules, cannot observe in the United States because we don't meet a minimum standard of democratic elections.
It's amazing. You know, here in Florida, people were freaking out. Why is our election system still so fucked up when they had since 2000 to fix it? Well, because of who's been in the governor's mansion. I mean,
they like it. It's not. But see, that's the whole point. Fucked up for whom?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, they talked about the Florida debacle, you know, as if it were some kind of general, like a hurricane.
Right.
It's no one's fault. It wasn't a debacle. It was a program. And the people, it was a crime, and the people who committed the crime of stealing black votes, the people who committed that crime in 2000, took over the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It was Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris elected Jeb's brother to the White House by stealing black votes. It was that simple. It was a criminal operation. It wasn't a debacle. And you know, so when we talk about these messes, debacles, screwed up, all that stuff, No. It's not a mess at all. It's a plan. It's a program.
It's the way they
Brian
like it.
Kemp was knew that as Secretary of State, and this happened with Chris Kobach too, in Kansas, which said first of all that's how they win the primaries. Remember, Kemp was stealing Republican votes. So was and Kobach stole Republican votes with both hands, which by the way is why Chris Kobach lost his race for governor in Kansas, and you're welcome. Yes,
I was going to. Hey, you beat me to it because that was the next thing I was going to bring up. Because you pointed out Chris Kobach and all the heinous things he's been doing, and I do think that you had a lot to do with him being defeated. The scary thing is,
well, my job is not just so you know. My job is I was just in Wichita, and I'm sure that Kobach has targets of me on his wall that he throws darts at, or he has I guess he has an automatic automatic rifle company, so he's probably blowing me into little bits in effigy. But my job is not to elect or unelect politicians. My job is to expose politicians and officials who steal votes and help get those votes counted. So what happens is by exposing Kobach and his vote thieving ways, when he turned it on Republicans, and I even said I wasn't sympathetic to the Republican governor, the sitting governor. He stole the race from his own Republican sitting governor by refusing to count 1,000 absentee ballots in from the governor's strong areas in Kansas City, and also not counting 3,000 provisional ballots from the governor's area. And then Kobach declared himself winner by 300 votes in the primary.
Oh, my.
The result was that several top Republicans endorsed either the Democrat. Can you imagine? Sitting Republican officials. I mean, not small ones either. Major Republican officials endorsed the Democrat, or they endorsed Greg Orman, the independent. He's kind of I was going to say Bernie crap, but he's an independent.
Mm-hmm.
He was Bernie Sanders' lead man in Kansas, but he's an independent, not a Democrat. And so you had him pulling votes from Republicans who were disgusted with Kobach but wouldn't vote Democratic. That was critical to the Democratic win. But it's all about exposure. And Orman talked again and again and again about my findings. Now, again, I'm not, you know, with Chris Kobach, my job isn't to remove him from office. My job is to make sure he stops stealing votes.
Sure.
Maybe that's the way but that's how the voters decide to stop his thieving ways. But here's my dire prediction, which God, God help the nation if it happens.
Or Attorney General.
Chris Kobach as Attorney
no,
General.
I
there
had
is
that
a
same
tremendous
thought.
Amount of right-wing pressure to make him Attorney General.
Oh, my God. I had the same thought. And when I brought it up the day that he lost, or the day when Jeff Sessions was shown the door, people were going, no, he wouldn't do that. Yeah, he would. That
yeah,
scares the hell out of me.
First of all, if you could bring in a Jeff Sessions, who, by the way, is a horrible person.
He's a horrible
and
person.
I'm going to be blunt. He's a racist.
Yes, he is.
He wanted to not only the Voting Rights Act is gutted, he's not satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to terminate it completely. This guy is bad news. Coretta King says he is basically carrying the water for the Ku Klux Klan.
Wow.
This is and now we're going to get worse than Sessions?
Yeah.
I mean, let's not start, you know that Donald Trump has got us going so crazy. People are saying Jeff Sessions is a great guy. People are saying Mattis, Mad Dog Mattis, is a great guy. People are saying like Mr. Global Warming Rex Tillerson is a great guy. Dick Cheney was a great guy. You know, it's like you know these. You know, George W. Bush was a decent human being.
Oh God,
well,
no.
Yeah, but the standard we are now setting for what's acceptable in government.
Right. Well, there was
is
a thing
dropping. To our shoelaces.
Yep.
I mean, when you have to say, when we miss George W. Bush,
no.
When we are applauding Tillerson and a creep like Jeff Sessions,
mm-hmm.
I mean, my God, God save America, and it's only going to be done by the vote.
That's it. So we have until 2020 to get things repaired. Through all the work you did and the few Democratic wins last week, which, you know, don't want to take anything away from that. Do you have any confidence that things will be better, at least a little better?
I have confidence in people like Stacey Abrams,
mm-hmm.
not in the Democratic Party, zero
right.
in the Democratic
yep.
Party. I mean, the Democratic Party is now picking up the issue for one reason, because the Democratic voters are demanding that they do it. But they're very behind. They're totally behind the curve. Totally. But Stacey Abrams is interesting. Of course, it's not nothing that she's an African American woman, because she's saying count all the votes. My big problem, well, Andrew Gillum's from the wrong side of this. I mean, he conceded before the vote.
Yeah, I don't know why he conceded.
Oh my
that
God! Night. I mean, how you know? You just know he's a Democrat.
Yes, right.
When you're winning,
of
when
course.
You're winning and you
right.
concede,
yeah.
you know it's a Democrat, because if it, you know, do you think Scott or DeSantis would just, well, doesn't look too good for us tonight, so go home, go to sleep,
yeah,
I quit.
No, he was
really?
Within a point, and he conceded. Yeah, it was not the
you
right
know, it's
thing
like,
to do.
And it's an insult, because not all the votes have been counted.
That's
in
right.
Florida.
That's
the
right.
absentees, the provisionals, the overseas ballots. You don't say those voters don't count, ever. And this is a problem with the Democratic Party. They don't fight. And the problem is that when Gillum conceded, as you know, a lot of listeners are involved in fighting at the polls over count this ballot or not. You know,
mm-hmm.
you got to fight over the each provisional ballot, each, and then they spoiled ballots. You know, ballots that are bent or can't be read by the machines. You now use paper, but they still are machine tallied.
Right,
and you have to make sure that those votes get counted. And you know, when you concede, a lot of your fighters go home, and then the Republicans just start throwing out ballots. And that's so Gillum's concession may have been self-fulfilling, and
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm concerned
yeah.
about. But also leads that bad precedent, especially in light of Stacey Abrams, you know, 4 hours later saying, the hell I'm going to concede.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't counted all the votes. Why should I concede? I'm not doing it. We're counting all the votes. And, in fact, when we're done counting all the votes, there will be, she thought, she didn't claim victory. She said, if we count all the votes, we will be running again in a month.
Wow. Well, hopefully they will. I mean, now the whole exact match bullshit was thrown out by a judge,
yeah.
right? So don't they have to count all those ballots that were pulled
yeah, but
out?
The problem is, here's the as a practical matter, I love these judges. I like, you know, Totenberg's great. But she says, oh, create a hotline so people know if their ballot's counted. What does that do for me? Make it so easier for people to prove, you know, go that they can go into the county office. Well, but how many people can do that? I mean, it's ridiculous. They've already spent 2 hours in line at a polling station, showed all their stuff.
Right.
Why do they need anything else? So, I mean, the judges don't live in the real world, is number one. And that's a big problem. But I think that, you know, there's still a chance. of things going the right way, you know, and I'm hoping to get to Florida. And frankly, I've spent more time in courtrooms than 99% of all lawyers. I know how to talk to judges.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could sit, you know, if I could speak to Judge Totenberg as an expert witness, something I'm long experienced in, I think I can explain why this thing is beyond repair or beyond people calling their county clerk. Because you had thousands, tens of thousands of people denied even the right to provisional ballot. So there's no way to count the ballots they never cast. All you can do is put these people back on the voter rolls and rerun the race as they're doing anyway.
All right.
They're already set up to
that's
do.
Right. Well, let's hope they
and go to GregPalace.com.
Absolutely. There's lots of updates at GregPalace.com and more to come. Greg, thank you so much for your work. I think we'd be in a lot worse shape without you, so thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Greg Palast, everybody. Find him at GregPalace.com, PALAST.com. And with that, we're done for a Tuesday. Tomorrow, the great Elizabeth Holtzman will be here. She's got a new book coming out this week. She's calling for the impeachment of Donald Trump. We'll talk tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.